Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
All righty, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. I'm Greg Williams. You're right here by a home as the sun's going down here in the beautiful Houston, Texas. I personally believe it's one of the best cities in the entire world. I love Houston. I just wish the only regret I have is I didn't get here quick enough. It took me, about 50 years to get to Houston, and I should have come sooner. Anyway, a little before that, about 47 years. It was great to have you here with us tonight. As you look at the kind of a cloudy sunset back there, everybody is going to be looking to the skies tomorrow. Is that not the craziest thing? And I don't even think I'm going to look out the window. It's going to be kind of cloudy here. It's just an eclipse. But if you want to, go ahead. Don't forget to wear the glasses and make yourself safe. But that's going to be, those once every 7 years, once every 10, once every 20-year things are kind of neat. But I don't think we're going to be in a good path tomorrow because it's going to be kind of partly cloudy, maybe even rainy here in Houston. But anyway, we have a great guest tonight. I've been running crazy after church. I left at about 11:05. Drove to San Antonio, did a presentation there at 212 miles away for about an hour and a half at 3 o'clock, and about 4:15 got on the road to drive 212 miles back to Houston to walk in here and open up the computer and have the show tonight. So I'm kind of wore out, but hey, this is worth the drive back for right here because I've thoroughly enjoyed this book. And we're going to get to talk about one of the great educators that we have of our time right now and this wonderful, wonderful book. And it's all about kids tonight in school and education, which is very, very important. So I'm looking forward to that. There's several different ways to get connected tonight. You can actually text me right here, 832-396-6525. Yes, that's my private cell phone number. I don't mind it going all the way around the world. That is also my counseling number. 24/7 for people that want to just have somebody to talk to. They can text me and say, hey, doctor, you have time to talk? And I'll be glad to listen. 832-396-6525. Or you can call 888-627-6008 is a toll-free number right into the radio station. And TJ Thomas, better known as, will be glad to answer it with BBS Radio and patch you through to our guest tonight. Or you can get on the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. My son Curtis in Seattle, Washington, in the United States Army, is running that because I don't even hardly know how to get on Facebook, let alone run my own page. He takes care of all that stuff. I'm not very techie. So that we have the best techs around right now. We have BBS Radio and my son in Seattle, and they'll take care of that. Feel free to comment on the Facebook page, and that'll be addressed right after our commercial break. As I always like to start off the program before we have our guests on, I want to kind of focus on something really quick tonight because we have an awesome guest and they're going to take the hours, it's going to fly by. But I think every now and then we get out of step in life. We get out of focus. We get out of kilter on what we ought to be focusing on. And every now and then that happens to me, more times than I want to admit, but it does. And I need to focus more on the positives in my life and be more grateful. Sometimes I just don't focus on what is really important in life. Maybe every now and then I'm too focused on work when really work isn't the main thing that should be driving my energy, driving my focus, driving my passion, even though we ought to be passionate about our work. I think sometimes we overlook what's really important, like our own children, our own grandchildren, our own spouses, those things in life that should take the major portion of our love and our energy. And it's not work sometimes. We overlook the things that are most valuable to focus on lesser valuable things. To gain greater focus on what we ought to be focused on, you have to sometimes, and this is going to be tough, sometimes you have to ignore things. Every now and then you have to say the word no, because sometimes people will come in and ask or beg for you to do something because of their lack of planning will cause us to rearrange our entire world and focus on something minor when they should have just planned more efficiently, more effectively. So saying no sometimes is something we need to learn. Saying, hey, wait, it's time to go home. It's time to be with family. It's time to focus on them instead of putting in 12, 14-hour days. And yes, I'm preaching to myself tonight. I'm preaching to the choir sometimes. Get up out of the chair and get out of that office and go home to where you ought to be. Overlook an urgent request that is done or due basically because of their lack of planning. Don't feel like you have to always give in to those requests. Ignore negative statements made about you by other people. We focus on that too much. I think sometimes we focus too much on the praise of people. And I know sometimes we focus too much on the negativism of other people. Somewhere in between is where we ought to land. Focus on results and not regret, on impact and not approval. If we can impact someone's life that needs to be impacted, it shadows people's approval that really doesn't matter to us. Why do we care on Facebook if we have 10,000 likes? Does it really matter? No, it really doesn't. But to make an impact on somebody's life, now, folks, that's what it's all about. Life, and let me tell you, life is short. Focus on what is important and simply ignore what is not. You can't accomplish big things if you're too distracted by the little things. The devil's greatest tool sometimes in his toolbox is to get us distracted, keep us out of focus, cause us to accept good instead of great, to be satisfied with mediocre instead of excellence. And I think that's going to get your week a little bit better this week. I learned that this week sometimes in the hard way, but don't settle for mediocrity. Don't settle for ordinary. Strive for extraordinary because you are created to be just that. And I got a feeling our guest tonight is going to be able to show us how to do that. Because why? I want to show you the cover of this book, but I want to bring in, first off, right now, Dr. Kathleen Corley. So bring in TJ, Dr. Corley. But I want you to see the cover of this book. Now, I'm not a brain surgeon by any means. I'm not even an educator. Not very smart. But I believe this is the Colosseum in Rome. Dr. Corley is an award-winning educator. She's an authority on culture, school culture. And I love this picture because of all these bright colors on a very old, antique Colosseum in Rome. I wonder why that's on the cover. And the book is entitled The Magical Place We Call School. She has an unbelievable resume, an unbelievable CV, however you want to put it. But I just want to welcome to the program tonight, Dr. Kathleen Corley. Welcome, Doctor. How are you this evening?
I'm great. Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Well, thank you for being with us. And tell me, am I wrong? Is that the Colosseum in Rome? And why did you put this? And what is it about all these bright colors on that institution?
That painting is called The Restoration of the Colosseum. But it has an Italian, that's the English translation of the Italian name for it. My husband and I were on our way on a trip. We rarely go on trips, but this was a big one. And we were in San Francisco and we were walking through a gallery, which this is 100% of the times I'd ever walked through a gallery. Not that I don't like art, we just don't get to do that kind of thing. And that painting, which is about 8 feet wide and 3.5 feet tall, it's in our living room now because my husband knew that I was so taken with it. He surprised me with a 50th birthday party many years ago. And that was in the restaurant waiting for us when we got there. The reason I was so taken with it was because, yes, there is this old iconic building that one would say is somewhat in ruins.
Yeah.
And it's being rebuilt with children's blocks. And there's something about that we're the caretakers of those children. And we help inspire them, but they're the ones who are going to get the bricks and the mortar and the ideas and everything else to surpass us in every possible way. The artist used to draw and put together patchwork sorts of collages and montages that were all in sepia tones. They were all dark. Not that it was dismal. It's just that they weren't cheerful. That wouldn't have captured my imagination. But he and his wife had a baby late in life. And he started to see everything through his son's eyes. So there's another painting that's sort of similar. That's the little train that if you were a child in the 50s or 60s, maybe even into the 70s, it's a little wooden train, and it has all those same colors, and it has little metal hooks that all the cars were hooked together with. So there's this sepia-toned attic scene that's dark, but the train is winding its way through the attic, and it has all kinds of light on it. So again, basically, he's saying, yes, this is my world, but this is his world, or this is going to be his world, if we do it right.
Wow, that's neat. You know, I think because of your musical background and your leadership in education, you are known as the Pied Piper of education. Where did that come from, and what does that mean in your world, with especially your local folks, the people that depend on you? You're still in education.
Oh yes,
now correct. You're still a principal.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Fantastic. So where did you get that byline?
I play many musical instruments. When you major in music, even if you major in vocal choral music, as I did, my intention was to teach vocal choral music, you know, general music in an elementary school, which I did for 9 years. But you have to take the instruments. You have to take string instruments and percussion and winds, but just a little bit, enough to know how to produce a sound on those instruments. But I played clarinet as a child. I wanted to play piano, but my parents said, yes, organ would be great. I said, no, they're nothing alike. No, please, please don't. My uncle owned a music store, so it was easy to get used instruments. So I did play the organ. I was paroled when I was in high school. And there's a great story about the piano that finally came into my life, but that's
Here's my
for another
piano right
day.
there.
There you go.
There's my baby.
Yes, mine wasn't a baby. Mine is a spinet, but close enough.
I love music. It's so impactful, and you can reach kids through music in ways that you can't in any other way, right?
I think the moniker came about when there was a boy. He's still at our school. There's sometimes he has autism. He's high functioning, but if things aren't just right for him, if things don't sound right, if they don't feel right, if he's hungry, if he's tired, he'll be ill at ease and he won't have the words, or he didn't have the words. He does now. He didn't have the words to say, this is what I need, or he didn't want to tell us. So he'd say, no, not going to class. No, not going. And I'd say, but Oliver, I'm going to use a flute today. Flute? You have a flute? Yes, I have a flute. Flute? I can hear it. Yes, you can hear it. And basically, he would follow me like the rats in Hamlin. The next day, I'd need a clarinet. No problem, I have one. Next day, it might be a trumpet, it might be a recorder, it might be a ukulele, a guitar, whatever I could grab and walk along with. He didn't do it every day, but he did it enough days. So that's where the Pied Piper part came from.
Now, if I remember right, you've been in education, at least the educational field, 40 plus years. Is that correct?
Yes, I have been a principal for 30. I've been an administrator for 36. And in education for 43 years.
43. Wow. What are we doing right? What are the schools? I mean, here I am. Smack dab in the middle of HISD, which I believe is the biggest school district I know in Texas, if not the country. Huge. And of course, the state is taking over. There's been all kinds of hustle and bustle about what they're doing wrong. First of all, let's just talk about what are teachers and school systems doing right today?
The teachers who really care about what they're doing know how to teach their children. They know how to teach their subject matter. They want to make it interesting and impactful. They're intentional about that, and they can't wait to get to work on Monday. That is, now we have data. Years ago, when you and I went to school, teachers kind of flew by the seat of their pants. They'd try things, and we were pretty much supposed to learn what they put in front of us. We needed to show some effort. They needed to show some effort. And if we both did, everything was great. And if we didn't have learning disabilities, even better. But there are children who have anxieties. There are children who have learning disabilities. There are children who have emotional disabilities. And until we figured out that we needed to meet children where they were, where they are, and scaffold, build bridges from where they are to where they could be, we weren't really doing what we needed to do. Because everybody knows the child who was above it all, who was sitting in his classroom counting ceiling tiles or throwing pencils up into the ceiling tiles. Remember that too.
Oh, yes.
On the opposite side of that, there are children who are just not in sync with what's going on. So we lose them. That is, they're paying attention to something else, or they're going to be class clown, or they're acting out in some way because they haven't been dialed in. I think it's interesting sometimes when a mom says, well, he's just bored. No, ma'am, he's not reading on grade level yet. So I don't think it's about being bored. I think it's about we're not meeting him where he is. Oh, no, he's very, very, very bright. Oh, okay. But he's not doing what he needs to be doing. So we need to change up what it is that we're doing. And she'll say, but it's just that he's bored. I said, well, let's analyze why he's bored. Let's take me, for example. In physics class, I never took physics. I had enough trouble with chemistry.
Me too.
If I was in a physics class, but I'd like to take it now to see if I could do a better job. Chemistry, I'd like to take it over. Wonder if Mr. Miller is still around because I would take the class from him again as I did as a junior. But if I were in physics class, I would be counting ceiling tiles because I'm not dialed in enough. I have no idea what he's talking about, and I feel lost. It's the same reason that you go to choir practice at church, and you go to choir practice, and you go to choir practice, and then you miss one, you miss two, you miss three. I wonder if you're going to go back because maybe you've missed too much. And it's just choir practice. They'll welcome you back. I mean, they're church people, they're nice. They'll welcome you back, but oh no, I don't know the music. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. That happens to children all the time. They don't tell us those things. They don't say, I do not have an intelligent enough question to ask. That's why I'm not raising my hand. Especially when kids
Why
get
is it that
to
our
junior high.
kids, at least in my world, I can remember my kindergarten teacher's name, Mrs. Fortney. Then I go to Mrs. Kincaid, Mrs. Hudson, Mrs. Fox, Mrs. Bass. I go all the way through 8th grade. When I get in high school, I forget all of the teachers. I have to really sit down and go, okay, who's my geometry teacher? But why is it? Is it,
Mr. Weedman was mine.
yeah,
But
I don't remember high school.
he stood out. High school, it's tougher because
Elementary, though, is it because our brains are so moldable? And they made such an impact on us, because I don't forget what happened those high school. It's like I must have slept through it, even though I got good grades. I don't remember it. What is it about that elementary age that is so important to make sure those kids get the right information in the right way?
You probably had a kindergarten teacher, maybe a different teacher for music, but probably not based on our ages. I'm not saying just you, me too. Mrs. Bossy was my kindergarten teacher, and she was the music teacher, and she gave me a C in music
Oh.
because I was hitting on the offbeat and not the beat when we were playing the tambourine. That was mostly what it was about. But I've forgiven her and I've proven her wrong. Anyway, when you're in elementary school, you have a few teachers, often one at a time, especially kindergarten, first grade, second grade. We also have related arts teachers, music, dance, technology, PE, etc. But when you get to high school, you have five, six teachers a day. And unless somebody is really, really on your mind a lot, who went to bat for you or was particularly nasty,
Yeah.
you don't really remember them. I don't think I remember all of my high school teachers. If I get out the yearbook, oh, absolutely, the memories come rushing back. But I think you're onto something as well, that this is another person for the first time in my life as a 5-year-old or 6-year-old, somebody besides my parents or my many aunts and uncles. This is somebody who's paying attention to me, who asks me what my opinion is, who calls on me when I raise my hand and I answer a question, and she says, good job. In high school, not as much.
Yeah, and those years are so important, are they not, when that
Yes.
those early year learning years?
That's why we need to be so intentional about what we do. The curriculum has to be what is decided upon by the state. And the testing needs to reflect what we're teaching in the curriculum. We need to teach the standards of the curriculum. And on the student side, we need to do it in such a way they will be compelled to learn it, which is not an easy thing to do because
Right.
we're competing with TikTok and video games and social atmospheres of a variety. Because sometimes children are just not, their headspace is not where we are, but we try to teach them there's a time and a place for for everything. You don't wear your bathing suit to church, and you don't think about TikTok while you're in science class, because we need your head in science.
When you started writing, I think it's the second or third chapter, you have the Maslow's hierarchy of needs and those five. And then you said before Bloom. How important are those hierarchy needs? Are those essential? And are you an advocate that it's all about IQ and we need to leave the EQ pushed to the side? I know that's two different questions, but how does all of that fit into when you're making your class lesson plan,
Yeah, let's
trying to reach that
handle
child?
we'll handle the first one first. Maslow before Bloom.
Yeah.
There are entire books written about those two psychologists and how one is focused on one area of development and the other is focused on quite another.
Yeah.
Bloom says we need to get to a much higher level of engagement with what we're learning, not simply the facts, but how do you apply the facts? How do you analyze what you just did? If you're using the engineering design process, you get to do all of those things because you have a theory of a thing, like you have basically want to build a better mousetrap or an anything trap. And you maybe start out with some ideas, you draw them out. I'm thinking maybe third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, something like that. And we'll put this together and we'll have this do this and then this do this. Oh, look, it doesn't work as well as it should. I'm analyzing. Well, what's wrong with it? I don't know yet. Let's try it out a couple of times. Oh, I see it needs a spring-loaded something or other. So the trap makes sure that it closes tightly. Oh, okay. How would we do that? That's the Bloom part of things. But the Maslow part of things is if a child is living in trauma or coming out of trauma, or a child doesn't have enough to eat, or a child feels that his mom isn't safe, any of those things, that is going to mess with him. If a child carries his toothbrush and soap in his book bag and maybe underwear, he's not going to think about that mousetrap thing. Not for long, especially when he looks up at the clock and thinks, yeah, that guy she's dating comes over about 10 o'clock every day. I wonder what's going to happen today because they had a bad conversation on the phone. And that's, I'm not making those things up. Those are for real things, as you know, happen. So we have to handle Maslow before we handle Bloom. Air, water, clean water, please. Food, enough food, please. A safe place to stay. And then we can get to other things. And I don't think enough is said about, as a child, I need to be safe, but I also need to know my family is okay. There was a time in Salem, Massachusetts, at the school that I was at, there was and it's in the book. There was a police chase from well, I guess it was Salem, New Hampshire to Salem, Massachusetts, and it ended in Salem. And the acting superintendent called and said, "There's an escaped bank robber, and he's armed, and he's being chased from state to state. Each set of state police drop off at the state line, and a new one picks him up." And he's on state number three now, and he's in Massachusetts, and it looks like he's going to go right past your school. If you have children outside, I thought it was odd that he said, maybe you want to bring them in. No, I definitely want to bring them in. But there's no time to talk to him about it. And we don't have a cage or anything. We don't have fences. We have fences to keep the balls from rolling out into the street, but it's not a secure fence like in an inner city sort of situation. So, I said on the radio to the assistants, you need to line the third graders up. I'll be right out there as soon as I can. I want to check the doors first. So I went outside and the kids with watches were going, what? Now they're 8 and 9 years old. What? But wait a minute, but it's not time. We'll answer your questions as best we can inside because they're taught to ask questions. And this is a legit one. Can't talk now. And the assistants didn't know what was going on either. So I whispered to them, there's an unsafe situation that's about to happen. We just need to get everybody inside. We'll go to the auditorium. We'll play games with them. It'll be fine. It was about 10 more minutes of their recess and then just make indoor recess for the rest of the time. It occurred to me, I cannot say anything to any of those students because we're fine, but all of their families are out there wherever. And as it turned out, it was one of our assistants, her brother. The guy ended up in a cul-de-sac, the genius he was. I think you know when you're entering a cul-de-sac that only has five houses on it, but okay, nobody said he was right. So he ended up there, and there was their half day pre-K, pre-kindergarten, and it was time for the man's twins to go to class, to go to school, and he would be taking them. Well, he wasn't going to be doing that because this guy busted in his house, had a gun on him, and said, "You're my hostage, and I don't know how long we're going to be here, ha, ha, ha." Now, the man, Paul, was a security guard at Walpole Prison. So he was fuming. And I think he was thinking, well, he talked about it later, I was not going to be made fun of later by my colleagues about what this guy was getting away with. But they got the children out, and they talked to the man, they released the children. But this assistant, Paul's sister, was a basket case, and she went to her mother's house to take care of her because she knew that it was Paul's house and grandma knew that it was Paul's house. So they needed to be taken care of. And I'm thinking, this is, I have no book on this, but it didn't make any sense to tell the children anything about what was going on outside until it was all over. We talked to them. I went class to class the next day and said, that was scary for some people. We made sure that you were safe.
Yeah.
I wanted you to get home first to see that your family was safe before we had any conversation about it. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that I can answer.
Yeah, that's the way to do that. Excellent, excellent. Tell you what, we're going to take our first break just real quick. On the other side of this break, I want to find out about a statement that you put in the book. I can't remember what chapter. That there's always a reason for a student's acting out behavior. I want to drill deep into that. 888-627-6008. And we'll be right back after this very short commercial break with Dr. Coral. Hang with us.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
All right, you can get on Amazon and look for that book, but I suggest you get on Amazon tonight and look for this one. This is it, Dr. Kathleen Corley, The Magical Place We Call School. Absolutely excellent reading from the front to the end, all the way. And I think it's, I can't even remember, chapter 3 or 4, when you're talking about that there's always a reason for a student's behavior when they start acting out. Is it always, Is it never, well, let me see. What's the percentage of the time that you feel like that it is even school related? Or do you think a lot of it is already brought in and it's already bottled up inside?
School probably exacerbates a lot of the problems. If I'm a child and I'm just barely making things work at home, my father yells, my mother yells back, I try to hide, I listen to music, I do whatever I can to absent myself from that. Every time I hear someone raise their voice at school, I'm probably going to have a problem with it. I just am. If anytime I feel that I'm less than in some way, whether I made myself feel that way, or I misunderstood something that a teacher said, or the teacher really said, "What are you doing? I don't understand. What th th this is terrible work. How could you possibly turn this work in?" If there's something where somebody's not building me up and I really need to be built up, I'm going to behave in a particular way. That doesn't mean I'm always going to act out per se. I might act in. I might cut myself. I might hit a wall. I might write nasty notes. I might write things on the bathroom wall. 95% of the time, something is written on the bathroom wall. It's that somebody needs something from someone. Or if they do something else in the bathroom, and you probably know what I'm talking about. When those things happen and we can't figure it out really quickly, we'll meet with some students in that grade level, or all of the students in that grade level, or all of the boys if it's happening in the boys' bathroom, all of the girls if it's happening in the girls' bathroom, and say, "Hey, somebody knows something about something, and we're not asking you to be a rat, but please understand that somebody is trying to communicate something, because this kind of thing doesn't happen unless somebody's trying to communicate something." Now, does that mean that every single time there's graffiti somewhere, it means something? No, it's possible somebody has a pen in their hand, they have nothing better to do, they're waiting or something, and they start writing something. Now, generally, that does not happen in our school. And we have a graffiti broken window theory, that if you have one broken window on an old factory on Tuesday, you will have 17 by Friday. Because it looks like what we do in our town. This is what they did. Nobody had a problem with it. Nobody fixed it. I didn't hear anything about it. There's a broken window. I'm going to break the one next to it, and then the one next to that, and the one next to that. But it's the same reason babies cry. Babies cry because they don't have the words. And once they get the words, there's crying and no, or food, or don't leave, or whatever the issue is. There has to be some sort of communication, and parents of infants are dying to know, what is it you want now? Why are you crying now? But it doesn't change when children get a little bit older. So the acting out is completely predictable, but unfortunately, we don't always know what it's about. So we
Is
have to find
school
out.
from our generation, is it just completely different? I mean, are the kids just going through so much more stuff than what we can even fathom? Because it seemed like, we literally almost went to school in bibbed overalls and barefoot, almost out in the country there. There wasn't very many kids at our school, in our grade school. And I didn't know anything about some of the stuff that they know all about it, second grade, third grade, fourth grade. It just is, it's world spinning too fast for these kids.
In one way, it's kind of fabulous. In another way, it's kind of treacherous. The fabulous part, I should do it the other way so as to end on a high note, right? But I won't. The fabulous way is there was a time when we knew that there was a drive to send water and food and things to soldiers in Afghanistan. And we also sent water to any time there was a natural disaster. If somebody was getting supplies to them somehow, we were in on it and said, could you pick up, I don't know, however many cases of water, et cetera, to send to them. But let's not just leave it there. Let's write nice messages on the water bottles. Put sleeves like the Starbucks sleeves, collars around the cup, but they're drawn by children and they have best wishes. And for the soldiers, thank you for defending us. American flags, the best that they could draw them. Hi, soldier, it's me, Jane. Hope you're safe. Things like that. Lieutenant Colonel called me once, months after the water had gotten to some place where he ended up. And it wasn't his camp because he and four or five other soldiers got separated from where they were supposed to be. So they landed in a different place. And he said, I got there in the middle of the night. They gave me three bottles of water. It was dark in that tent. It was dark on my way to my tent. It was dark in my tent. And all I wanted to do is go to sleep. I drank a bottle of water, and the other two were lying on my chest when I woke up. But that's when I found out that your kids wrote messages on them. And I can't tell you how much that meant to me to do that. So, as far as I was concerned, we're writing messages on every bottle of water. So, little Thomas in first grade did the sleeves on the water, and that was for whatever natural disaster had just occurred. And then he was in third grade when something else happened, and he raised his hand in that class and said, "Well, you know what we need to do? We need to go get some water and write some nice messages." That's kind of cool because we didn't tell him necessarily. I think he brought to school, "Hey, did you know there's a problem in Haiti, that there was a hurricane in Haiti?" And then he said, "You know what we need to do? This is what we need to do." I love that. That's a fabulous thing to do. We wouldn't have known about Haiti. Our parents might have told us, but he knew from television and from the internet and from other things. It's a great source of learning things. We just had a maker fair the other night, and it's anything you could imagine that is fair, decent, legal, moral, reasonable to make. Somebody was making it. And it was either adults, I make terrariums. It's the thing that I do. I've done it for 5 years, I think. And they come by and we save jars forever. And we have jars and soil and sand and little plants. And we make the things together. They have a little passport. They get a stamp for each place they visit. Well, this time we had fifth graders who were showing kids how to do things. Henry, who can be happy or sad. And he has good reasons for it on the sad part. Henry came to school not long ago and he had origami. Henry, how did you? He's a fifth grader. How did you learn to make that? And he went, the internet. He wasn't being rude, but like, have you heard of it, Dr. Corley? I mean, it's been there for a while. I would think you would know something. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I've just watched a YouTube video. And I went, okay, testing. Paper crane. And he said, yeah, it's hard. It's hard. But there's a video. So I'm learning it. It's hard to get it all right, but I'm learning it. And I knew that he was cutting paper. It has to be square, not rectangular. He had rectangular paper and he was cutting it to be square. And I'm thinking, oh, the boy needs origami paper. So I got 1,000 sheets and I had it in my office. I said, Henry, do you think you'd want to teach some other kids to make those at Maker Faire? Yes. And he said, do you think they can? I said, well, you're better than a video, dude. So don't you think? And he said, yes, of course. So I gave him that brick of origami papers, and I had three paper cranes sitting on my desk the next day in wild colors that he liked in that group. There was a girl who said, yes, I've been learning how to crochet. And I want to do this for Maker Faire. but I have a list of needs, and that's what she gave to the teacher who was in charge. Teacher said, I don't know anything about crocheting. She said, well, I do, and I can tell you how big the yarn should be and how much of the yarn that I need, et cetera, et cetera. They have other outlets. Maybe grandma's not around to teach her how to crochet. Maybe she lives too far away. If grandma does know how to crochet, they could FaceTime. I couldn't FaceTime with my grandmother. My grandmother did know how to crochet, and I don't. I was 6 when she passed on, so I guess we both get a little grace on that. But that's one great thing. The bad thing is the ridiculous things that adolescents do with their phones when they're texting people. They can be so incredibly brutal to each other and go dark so quickly, and then sit right next to that same child the next day in class and be friendly. And I'm going, wait, you're confusing me. You're calling each other names, nasty names, ones that start with B and sometimes N. Now, these aren't things that we're party to, except for parents come and say, can you help me with the fact that my child is on her phone? I go, ah, her phone? Not the computer that we give them. And we have all sorts of safeguards built in that you try to put in a dirty word, there are three apps that are going to catch you, and we're going to speak to you first thing the next morning. And there are three different ways that it goes. One is it's called Gaggle. And if anybody's typing anything self-injurious or something they want to do to somebody else on our machines, that is picked up. And the kids know that too. And then there's another thing called iBoss. And if they're looking up something they shouldn't be looking up, there's Damien was looking up pronouns and he put in porn noun. So it says, excuse me, no, you can't do that. And I couldn't tell him, I wouldn't tell him what he did wrong because I knew that then he would look up what he shouldn't be looking up. So I'm sure he knows it by now. He's in seventh grade. I'm sure he knows what that word means. But they can be so nasty to each other, and there's no reason for it. One of our we have a behavior management individual. His name is Mr. Rodriguez. They call him Mr. Rod. Mr. Rod also coaches high school baseball and youngers too. And he said his high school guys are the same. They have their heads in their phones when they're not practicing. They're not conversational with each other. They don't know what to say to each other. So they're ugly to each other. So, like if you and I are friends, whether we're high school kids or younger than that, and there's a third friend walks up, and as he's walking up, I say, do you remember the time that he tripped over that basket? He looked like an idiot. Remember, everybody laughed? And I'll drag that up from 2 years ago. And as he walks up, we're basically making fun of him for something he did 2 years ago. Really? You guys don't know what to talk about? So now, all over the hallways, there are conversation starters. What do you think your first car will look like? Share that with somebody. Ask somebody what their favorite color is. Ask somebody who they follow for soccer teams. We have a lot of students who are from Central America. And rural Mexico, and they follow soccer religiously. That's a thing to talk about. You can't get in too many fights about that, and you won't call each other names. And they don't tend to do that, but it works its way into something ugly. And then they say, oh, I was just playing. No, you were not. No, you were not. That's not playing. Do you know the name of that child's mother? No. Do you know if he has a dog? No. Do you know if he likes lima beans? No. Then you don't know enough about him. Don't act like he's your brother. Don't act like he's your cousin. You're not familiar enough with him to not hurt his heart by accident.
I tell you what, we've only got a minute or two. On while we're on that vein of conversation, that topic, is bullying just a huge issue? You have a whole chapter on that, a great chapter on bullying. How do you deal with that?
You have to stop it at its root. It's bad. It
Huge problem.
can get nasty if you don't stop it right away.
Yeah.
And they'll some of what some people think is bullying is not really bullying. It's just darn annoying, and unpleasant and disrespectful. But that's enough because it's going to turn into bullying. And there is no reason for somebody to feel, and I think I said it before, less than when they come to school or not want to come to school because somebody's going to say something ugly to them. So we have to
Right.
be very vigilant about it. We have an app for that too called See Something, Say Something. And if you were bullying somebody I know, I could say, or me, name a person who's bullying, Dr. Williams, name a person who's being bullied. Jane Smith, your name, anonymous if I want it to be. And adults can do this too about coworkers. It's totally fair game in our district. And a lot of times things are figured out in this way. And sometimes they do put their names, often they put their names. But more often than using the app, they'll tell a teacher or someone will tell a teacher on their behalf. Now, something that our students are getting better at is standing up for someone else,
Yeah.
walking into the thing and saying, I don't think that's right. You need to stop. And if the kid goes, yeah, you and whose army is going to stop me? Wait right there. And then he gets a teacher. And
Yeah.
then it's handled because they're still young enough to make that kind of thing work.
Right. Zero tolerance.
Of zero tolerance insofar as there will be a consequence for anyone who is treating someone with disrespect. Yes.
Learning moment,
Oh,
teaching moment.
absolutely. Yes,
Yes.
absolutely. And I know it's not popular in some circles, but we believe in restorative justice where you and I face each other and you tell me what it was that I did wrong that you just reported and the adult is standing by. And what it is you need for me to do, or more likely not do, stop calling me names, or stop making fun of me, or stop taking the ball away from me, or whatever. And then the adult will say, well, Corley, do you believe that you can live with that? Yes. Well, look him in the eye and talk to him about it. And what do you need from him? And what I really probably want is for you to like me. Or pay attention to me, and I don't have the words for it. So we try to give them the words.
Wow. I knew this hour would fly by. This is the book. And Dr. Corley, what's the best way that you would want people to reach out and grab this book? Amazon or Barnes and Noble? How do we get this?
All of the usual suspects, just like you said. Yes.
Okay. And you got another book in you?
I don't know. We'll see how this one goes.
Okay. Well, very good. I didn't get through half of what I was going to talk about. I may have to have you come back and we will finish up this conversation. But thank you so much. Is there anything that, if somebody wants to reach out to you, if they want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
I'm on Facebook, Kathy Klebs. My maiden name is Klebs, Klebs, Kathy Klebs Corley. And you'll find me there. I'll answer any question. I do that a lot in principal groups, especially for younger principals. I love sharing what I know with them.
Fantastic. And if somebody wants to invite you to come to their district to speak, get a hold
There
of
is
your
a
publisher, get
website.
a hold of you directly.
There's a website that is called predictably the magical place we call school.com. So you can ask there, and I would be happy to entertain that thought.
Fantastic. The Pied Piper of Education. Thank you so much for being with us this evening, and thank you for writing this book. And I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. The magical place we call school. Dr. Kathleen Corley. Get it tonight. God bless you. Thank you for being with us. I appreciate it, Doctor.
Thank you. I
As
appreciate
we do each and every week, we always like to end the program by letting you know no matter what you have been dealing with in life, no matter where you're at, no matter what you're going to face tomorrow, please lean into the computer right now, the phone, listen into the radio, and put the earplugs really close to your ears. No matter what you're dealing with, I want to let you know there is always, always hope. Always hope. There's people that want to be champions like these teachers at Dr. Corley schools and teachers around this nation that want to offer hope to the kids, and they are a resource. Don't throw them out with the bathwater and think all the the headlines are about every school. There's some great schools out there, great teachers, and they have great hearts. Kids, if you need somebody to go to somebody you trust, and there's not better people than teachers. So just never give up on hope and lean into somebody that you can trust. Thank you for being with us. You will not want to miss next week's program. It is going to blow your socks off. Money back guarantee. Join us right here next week for the next edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless. Have an awesome, awesome week. We'll talk soon. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1. For the next episode of Breaking the Silence.